Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today is part one of a series that I'm going to be doing on mold toxicity or mold illness or mycotoxin illness. There's obviously various names for it, which some of you, depending on how many of my other podcasts you've listened to, might know that that was something that I had to work through in my own chronic fatigue recovery journey. It was in some ways actually the last piece of the puzzle for me because, and this is what we'll talk about in the podcast today, is it can often be something that goes missed with a lot of people. And this was definitely the case for me. Is I think I probably have shared this in a previous episode, but I was reading this book called Toxic by Dr. Neil Nathan, which is a fantastic book if you do suspect you may have mold illness. And I was reading this book thinking, this will be a great book for me to read so I can help my clients. And as I was reading this book, I just had this sort of gut sensation or gut sort of bit of intuition saying, I wonder if this could also be a problem for you. And so, you know, I've been on my chronic illness journey for a couple of years at this point in time. I'd done a lot of work on myself. I was seeing improvements, but it was discovering the mold and then really kind of working on addressing the mold alongside the nervous system as well, which really gave me that big leg up in my journey and allowed me to have the health that I have today. But because I've been on the journey for a while and I was making progress and I wasn't that, I'm going to put in air quotes, that sick. Obviously, I wasn't living like a normal human being, but I thought to myself, the mold thing, that's an issue for people who are really sick. It's not an issue. It wouldn't be an issue for someone like me. I'm doing okay. But I thought I would test anyway for mold mycotoxins. And I'll talk about all the ins and outs of this in more detail in today's episode. But when that panel came back with a positive result, it really did start to create a big shift for me because I could start to then create a targeted and personalized plan for myself to get rid of the mold, detox the mold, work through what I needed to work through to manage that. And it really was something that made a big difference in my own journey. And you would think that I would have spoken about this then sooner on my podcast. You know, it's a really big topic. And it's been something that has been quite profound for me. I would say probably about 50% of the clients that we're working with are working through some sort of mold issue, if not more. So it's something that we're working with day to day. But I think what has really put me off recording the podcast up until now is because it is just such a big topic. I kind of felt like I didn't even know how to begin to structure the information and begin to present this information in a way that could be useful. As time has gone on and I've been working with more clients and I've been continuing to grow and educate myself and learn more from some of the leaders in this field, I'm starting to feel more confident about talking about it in a structured way. When you're working with clients, it's easier because you're working with their specific case. So you just have to work with what they need. But when you're creating a podcast, which is going out to the general public, you have to present the information in a way that can still be useful without getting lost in the detail of personalization like we would do if it was a client. So there's been a lot of barriers, is what I'm trying to say, to starting to record an episode on this topic, but I feel ready. Today is going to be part one of a series on mold. What I'll really be talking about today is what mold illness is, how we can become exposed or how we can become impacted, what are the signs or symptoms that it could be an issue for us, what testing can we do? And I'll be painting the bigger picture of the framework for like how we start to address mold. And then in subsequent episodes, I'll then go into the nitty gritty, the more specifics of how we work through it in a strategic way. If I was to go through everything in one episode, it would probably just be too much information. And also when we're working with mold, it can take time. This can be a 6, 12, 18 month plus journey. And so if I give you all the information now today in one episode, it's probably just going to overwhelm you. It's going to be too much too soon. So instead, I'd rather just break the information down in little chunks for you. You can go away, you can think about it, you can implement some stuff, and then you can come back to the next episode on this when you're ready and implement a little bit more. I will say before we get started that it is a Sunday today. I do not often, or I don't think I have ever recorded a podcast episode on a Sunday, but it is pouring with rain outside, which could potentially be impacting the sound quality at this point in time. I hope it isn't. But it also, it's just a Sunday afternoon. It's the 1st of December. It's rainy and I have been getting behind on the podcast episodes lately. So I just thought this was a great opportunity to record an episode, but I do hope all the rain isn't going to come too much through in the sound. And then one more thing before we dive into today's episode is if you haven't already, please leave a review. I think I've said this many times now, but I do always check the reviews and I can see them creeping up every week as more episodes come out. And I see that some people are also leaving comments now in Spotify on individual episodes. And I'm reading those comments and I'm reading the little paragraphs that people are sharing on iTunes. And I just want to say thank you so much to everybody who's left a review on Spotify, left a comment on Spotify, left a review on iTunes, left a comment on iTunes. You guys are awesome. I just appreciate the support for this podcast so much. Because as I've said is so far, it's, you know, it's an ad-free podcast. It's self-funded. So, you know, I pay for the editing. It takes time to obviously plan and record episodes. There's various expenses relating to hosting platforms and things like that. And just the time to do like the uploading and create the blog and all the other bits and pieces, that go above and beyond just me being here and talking. So you sharing your reviews, writing the comments, sharing the episodes when they come out, giving me feedback on social media that you've enjoyed the podcast. It all really does mean so much and it keeps me energized to keep on putting in the work to create this for you. So if you haven't already, leave a review. Otherwise, share this episode with a friend or a family member or someone in your life who you think could potentially benefit from listening to this episode. All of that being said, I think that's the longest introduction I've ever done. It looks like we're about 8 minutes at this point in time. But let's first of all talk about what mold illness is. So mold illness is basically a constellation of symptoms which are created through exposure to either mold toxins, so toxins being produced by mold spores in your living environment, your working environment, your car, places where you spend a lot of time. Mold is everywhere, but if we're living in large amounts of mold and those mold spores are producing toxins, we can inhale those spores and then they can overwhelm the body with toxicity. In addition to mold illness being related to the inhalation of mold mycotoxins, we can also inhale mold spores. And these mold spores can colonize the nasal passages, they can colonize the sinuses, they can colonize in the gut, and then they produce their own toxins. So mold illness can be exposure to toxins in your environment, but it can also be mold which has colonized your own body, which continues to produce the toxins even when you're no longer in that environment. So some of our clients are living in mold and they're being exposed to mold in their living environment, but some of our clients have historically lived in moldy buildings. They have colonized, the mold spores have colonized their body. They've left the moldy building, but they've continued to experience the toxic load. And then the third way in which mold illness can constellate is through mold allergy. So this is when someone would have an IgE response, E for echo, response to mold. So you can imagine if you've got, you're exposed to mold toxins, you've got mold colonization in your body, and you're allergic to it, that is going to be sending your immune system absolutely crazy. And usually these people are the sickest of the sick. So some people can just have the mycotoxins. Some people can have mycotoxins and mold colonization. And then some people can have mycotoxin exposure, colonization, and mold allergy, which will make them pretty unwell. So that's what we're usually testing for with our clients. And I'll talk about testing in a moment. We're trying to determine, does this person just have the toxins? Do they have the toxins and the colonization? Or is there some sort of allergic response also happening as well? So where do we become exposed? Well, I've already told you that we can get this from living in buildings where there is mold, basically water damaged buildings. But it might not only be your home. It could be your car. It could be a place where you work or any place where you spend a lot of time, a school, a college, a daycare center, houses of family and friends, a church. You know, even if you feel that your home is safe and you're not being exposed to in your home, consider if there are other places where you could be exposed. And then we're exposed through inhaling toxins through the nose and mouth. We can absorb toxins through our skin. And if there's colonization, they can grow in our body. The mold spores can grow in our body, in our noses, in our sinuses, in the gastrointestinal tract. Very often mold illness comes with GI issues. In our ears, in our vaginal canal, if you're a woman or someone with a vagina, and maybe someone who's prone to a lot of yeast infections or thrush. And also skin and nails, like toenail fungus or fungal infections on the skin. And I know that I had some fungal infections on my skin from time to time, which is very interesting. So we can be exposed to these mold spores. We can be exposed to these mycotoxins. We can inhale them. We can absorb them through the skin and various, you know, other orifices of the body. And they can impact our entire body. They can potentially have a system-wide impact on the body, which can cause a whole constellation of symptoms. And this is why mold often gets missed, is because there's so many different symptoms that it can be difficult to see the wood for the trees, because maybe it appears like there's no correlation in symptoms. There's just a whole bunch of random stuff going on. These are some of the symptoms, but symptoms relating to mold are not limited to the list that I'm going to share with you. This list is from Dr. Neil Nathan's book, Toxic, and it is really just a very, very short list. But it includes fatigue, obviously, weakness, muscle aches and cramps, headaches, sensitivity to light, unusual pulsing sensations in the body, abdominal pain, nausea, and diarrhea. So any kind of GI symptoms. I've shared before on the podcast how I had chronic diarrhea for a long time. Chronic sinus congestion. That's one that comes up a lot with our clients. Coughing, chest pain, shortness of breath, joint pain and stiffness, cognitive impairment, skin sensitivity, numbness and tingling, electrical shock sensations in the body, a metallic taste in the mouth, excessive thirst, dizziness, frequent urination, anxiety and depression and mood swings, night sweats, problems regulating body temperature, and neurological symptoms of unknown cause. A lot of our clients come to us and they've seen a neurologist. The neurologist is like, no, there's nothing to worry about. There's nothing wrong with you. And then I'm like, right, let's test you for mold. And those clients test positive for mold. And so with all of these different symptoms, a lot of them can be driven by our mast cells. Now, I have spoken about mast cells in previous episodes, but basically mast cells are a type of white blood cell that's found in connective tissue throughout the body. So usually we find mast cells at the boundaries of our internal and external environment because they are the first line of defense on mucosal surfaces, such as the lungs, which is why mold can impact breathing issues, such as the digestive tract, which is why we may get digestive issues when we are exposed to mold, and also the skin. So that's why we can get these fungal infections, toenail infections, things as well happening on the skin, or like rashes, itching on the skin, that type of thing. We can also find mast cells in blood vessels, lymph vessels, and in our nerves, which is one of the reasons why mast cells can impact the nervous system, or mold can impact the nervous system through the mast cells, because we have mast cells at every single nerve ending in our body. And I've heard different practitioners say that like 50% of dealing with mold and dealing with the mast cells is working on the nervous system. Molds can activate toll-like receptors on the mast cells, which can cause a system-wide inflammation in the body. Mast cells have multiple different receptor sites and release mediators based on different triggers attaching to the receptor site. So mold can be one trigger for a mast cell, which would create system-wide inflammation in the body by activating the toll-like receptors. But we can also be having other triggers alongside mold. So there can be other pathogens which are triggering our mast cells. There can be other chemicals, other toxins, which can be triggering our mast cells. And because of that close relationship between mast cells and the nervous system, big traumatic events or just chronic, low-grade, ongoing stresses can all activate mast cells. And as you may have heard me talk about in previous episodes, if these things are all adding up and stacking up over a long period of time, this can cause the mast cells to become overreactive and cause them to become very dysregulated. And that's essentially the nature of mast cell activation syndrome, which I've talked about in previous episodes. And so it is suggested that 50% of people who are chronically ill may be impacted by mast cell activation syndrome, because usually people who are chronically ill have had all these, this ongoing buildup of, you know, chemical stress, toxic stress, emotional stress, pathogen stress, all the different ways in which our mast cells can become triggered and activated. They're just continuously overstimulated over time and they become dysregulated. And that contributes to the picture of chronic disease. So this episode is not supposed to be on mast cells. It's supposed to be on mold, but it's very difficult to talk about mold without talking about mast cells, because the two usually go hand in hand together. So if you would like to learn a little bit more about mast cells, you can listen to episode 42 and episode 43 of this podcast, where I talk about mast cell activation and histamine in more detail, and then how we can support the mast cells through our diet. But generally speaking, as I've said already, is that my observation from clinical practice is the majority of people who have mast cell and histamine issues usually have mold as an underlying trigger. And when we address mold and the nervous system, this can often be like the biggest pieces of the puzzle that we're working on with people. And they're the things that can make the biggest difference. They can often be underlyings in other things that people are coming with. So if people are coming with like chronic digestive issues or SIBO, for example, that hasn't completely gone away or keeps relapsing, or people have some sort of viral reactivation like EBV, which keeps on happening, or some people have got Lyme disease and chronic Lyme, they're just not able to get well. Very often, mold is underlying in these cases. And when we address the mold, then people start to get better. So let's just talk about how we address it. As I said, I'll be doing other episodes where we go into some of this in a little bit more detail, but this is how we address mold in a nutshell. So I guess the first thing is you want to know if mold is an issue for you or not. And this is where testing comes in. Now, there are various tests for mold. The ones that we typically use in our practice are those offered by Mosaic. The provider for Mosaic tests in this country is Regeneris Labs. You can usually order these tests through an appropriately qualified practitioner. So that would be someone like myself, a nutritional therapist, a functional medicine practitioner. I'm not sure, but there may even be an option to self-order from Regeneris without any practitioner affiliation. But then you will need to know how to interpret your test results when you get the results for your test. So when we test with Mosaic, there's two options. You can test for the mycotoxins only, which is a urine test. So just collect your urine first thing in the morning, send it back to the lab. They'll tell you if there's mycotoxins in your urine. The other option is to do a urine test with organic acids, which is also urine. So mycotoxin urine plus organic acids urine. And the organic acids can give an indication of mold spore colonization in the body. So it can tell you if you're just dealing with mycotoxins or if you're dealing with the colonization of the toxins in your body as well. Then the third thing we want to test is IgE. That can actually be done through your doctor. Even I've had this done through my doctor. You just go to your doctor if you have some more allergic type symptoms. You can say you're presenting with these symptoms. Could they test you for like total IgE? And could they test you for mold specifically? And in some cases, they'll even test you for a specific species of mold as well. So those are the testing options. I'm not going to focus too much on the mold allergy side of things for the purposes of this series, mostly because the main thing you want to do if you have an allergy is complete avoidance. So people who have mold allergy need to practice very, very, very strict mold avoidance, stricter than someone else who maybe doesn't have the allergy. There are things that we can also do to support the immune system if someone has mold allergy, but I won't be talking about that today. We'll see how I get with the series, and maybe that's something I'll talk about at a later date. So let's just assume there's no mold allergy, but there's positive mold mycotoxins and there's positive markers of mold spore colonization. What do we do with those results? Well, if you've been listening to this podcast, you would know by now that the first thing we want to do is get as much stability as possible. And I've talked about this endlessly in other episodes, so I'm not going to talk about it endlessly at this point in time. But what we're really looking for is that we've got stable blood sugar, that we're working on our nervous system. Remember, there's that relationship between mold and mast cells and the nervous system. And some people, some practitioners who are experts in this field are saying that up to 50% of the work is working on the nervous system. And, you know, I'm non-dogmatic, so I'm never going to tell you it's exactly 50%. 50% of you getting better is going to be your nervous system. I think we are such complex beings to kind of give a very set statistic like this. But I think most people who have a chronic illness will do well to support their nervous system. And it could be a big part of the puzzle for you. In some cases, it can be 80% of the puzzle for a lot of people. So we want blood sugar balanced. We want nervous system stability. We want to be sleeping well. We want to be pacing well. And if needed, we may need to stabilize our mast cells, which can be done through supplements and a low histamine diet, which I talk more about in episode 43 of this podcast. So here, what I want to say is that this is never a perfect recipe, because sometimes this can also be a little bit of chicken and egg. Sometimes we need to start dealing with the mold to get more stability, but we do want to just do as much as possible, especially when it comes to like pacing and routine and blood sugar, to get stability. Sometimes sleep may improve once we start working through some of what's going on, but we just want to do our best in across these areas and not let the perfect ruin the good. Just make sure that we're doing enough so that there's a sense of being stable enough to start working through some more complex strategies. Then there's six main things we're going to do. And these six main things I'll talk about in more detail in subsequent episodes. Number one is mold avoidance. So here we want to make sure we're avoiding further exposure, whether that's exposure to more toxins through our environment or exposure to spores that we can inhale and that can perpetuate the colonization. So we need to make sure that we're out of mold. We need to get out of a moldy home, a moldy car, a moldy workplace. Wherever you're getting exposed, you want to get out. This is probably one of the most challenging things of working with someone who has mold illness, is because sometimes they can't afford to get out. They can't afford to renovate their home. This is where we have to be like really realistic with about what can be achieved if someone can't get out of mold. Now, I work with my clients a lot. Like, we talk through the different options for them. And, you know, I will say, like, we can work on your resilience. We can do as much as possible, but there may be a ceiling at how much we can achieve here unless you can get to a safe environment. So it's worth acknowledging that. But we also want to be avoiding mold that we may be exposed to through food. And I'll go through that in more detail at a later date. And just as a whole, reducing our overall toxic load. Because if these mycotoxins are coming into the body and taking up a lot in terms of the detox and drainage systems, we don't want to be having even more toxins that are also doing the same. So kind of having some good low-tox living practices and just reducing toxic load wherever possible by drinking clean water, eating clean food, being mindful of cleaning products in our home, being mindful of beauty care products in our home, things like that. So avoid the mold, putting less into the top of the funnel. Then the second thing we want to do is support elimination. We need to be able to get the toxins out of the body, which means we need to be eliminating. And one of the biggest ways we can do that is through our bowels. So if you're someone who is constipated, we need to get the bowels moving so that you are excreting out toxins from your body, which kind of segues into the next thing, point number three, which is we need to increase drainage and detox. So detoxification refers to the biotransformation of toxins in the liver. And then drainage is how we drain the detoxified compounds from the body. We've talked about the importance of bowel movements, but we can also do this through sweat. We can also do this through urination, which means we also probably want to be looking at our lymphatic system and making sure that we're moving, making sure that we're staying hydrated. We might need to be supporting the kidneys. We might need to be supporting the liver. We might also need to be supporting the gut and the gallbladder and just making sure that all those other organ systems are working really well. Then once we're avoiding mold, we're eliminating, we've got good detoxification and drainage happening, then we can maybe start to add in some supplements to help the process along. And in this case, the fourth thing we want to do is add binders. So binders being the garbage men of the gut, they help to attract or pull in toxins which are in the gut and help to carry them out of the body in the feces, instead of potentially, in some cases, being added back into circulation. Then if antimicrobials are an issue, we want to be using herbal antimicrobials to kill off mold species that have colonized in the body. And this is where I'll talk more in further episodes about how we do this, because sometimes when we do this, we can increase the toxic load. And if we're taking binders or we're taking antimicrobials before we've properly prepared the body through mold avoidance, through supporting elimination, through stabilizing the body, through supporting detox and drainage, if we haven't done those steps properly, the body can become very overwhelmed very quickly if we add binders in and too many toxins are getting pulled into circulation, or we're adding antimicrobials and there's an increase in toxic load as we kill off some of the colonized mold species. So we need to tread very carefully with those steps. We, in some cases, for people who are highly sensitive, we need to tread very carefully with all of these steps. And this is where it can be helpful to work with a practitioner who will pace you. And I will hold my hand up and say, even when I think I'm pacing someone, things still do go wrong and we still do push too fast, too soon, and experience flare-ups as a consequence. So there's definitely a very delicate balance to this at times. And then the sixth thing we might do is add biofilm disruptors. So biofilms are like a polysaccharide carbohydrate layer that forms in the body. So it's almost like a protective layer where the things like bacteria, yeast, fungus, mold, parasites, they can kind of like hide under this polysaccharide layer, which protects them against antifungal therapies or against the body's own immune system. So at some point in time, we might need to add in something that could disrupt these biofilm layers to reveal some of the things that have been hiding from the body, so that we can then target those and really properly address the issue. So those are the six steps: mold avoidance, supporting elimination, supporting detox and drainage, binders, antimicrobials, and then like another round where you disrupt the biofilm and then continue with the binders and antimicrobials. And at some point in time, you'll probably want to retest. Retesting is really helpful to see if what you're doing is working or not, and helps you to perhaps target binders to specific mold species and overall just kind of track progress. Because I said at the beginning of this episode that this process is at least 6 months, probably even more. At least 6 months, especially if you're sensitive, it's probably going to take longer because you have to move through each of these six steps really, really slowly. And that's in addition to all the stabilizing work that you may have to do in preparation. So I hope that has been helpful just to get a big picture of the puzzle in terms of how we address mold. I will be going into some more details on these six steps in subsequent episodes. But just to finish off by saying, sometimes I'm working with someone who's in a moldy home. They're okay, but their partner or their family member, sorry, they're not okay, but their partner or their family member is doing all right. And so just because you're doing okay, just because your partner's doing okay, but you're not doing okay, it doesn't mean that you're making this up. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. It just might mean that they have less of an overall burden than you do. When we talked about the mast cell, how the mast cells can have multiple different triggers, and it's the collection of those triggers which can then cause an overflowing bucket, overflowing cascade, and initiate the cell danger response in the body. So they may just have less full bucket than you. They may have inherently more resilience. Genetically, they may be better detoxifiers. There may be other things going on in their unique physiology, which makes them less sensitive. But just because you are sensitive doesn't mean this is an issue that you should overlook. So if you think that mold could be a factor in your case, but you're dismissing it because other people in your house or your home are healthy, then I would encourage you to think again. And sometimes these other people in the home might not be as sick as you, but they may have their own little niggles and bits and bobs going on that they're just normalizing as, you know, being too tired, being too stressed, being aging, etc. But actually some of these symptoms could potentially be relating to mold. So I hope you have enjoyed this episode. I look forward to talking with you in the next episode, where we'll go into mold avoidance, talking a little bit about mold avoidance in the home in more detail, and then mold avoidance through diet in more detail. So stay tuned for the next episode, and I will see you very, very soon.